Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we have a patient who needs no introduction because he lived his introduction. This is a patient who is very dear to me by the name of Matt Ketchum out of Indiana, who has lived both as a patient with chronic pain, as a patient with substance use dependency. And he is someone who has learned through his lived experiences the things that are going wrong and the things that are going right in the opiate epidemic now, in the previous 5 years, in the previous 10 years. So with that, I'd like to welcome Matt to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Dr. for having me, first of all. And yeah, it's great to be here and great to speak on this topic. As you said, I've had a lot of experience in it, and it's been a pretty wild ride, actually, for the past couple of decades.
Yeah, and Matt, you have a very unique experience. And I think that the audience needs to hear just how unique it is. Can you kind of give us a timeline for your health and your experiences medically so the audience can understand the perspectives you're speaking on?
Sure. I was a typical Midwestern kid, you know, starting off, you know. I didn't have any experience with, bad health or anything like that. I'd never broken a bone before my first car accident when I was 19. And I played sports my whole life, you know, played football, played baseball, you know, never had experience with a broken bone or anything like that. When I was 19, I actually was T-boned in a car accident. It was not my fault. And I broke my neck, snapped my second vertebrae off to a nub. It was actually carted off in an ambulance and went through like a six-month process of wearing a halo and, you know, being prescribed Percocet, you know, a heavy pain medication. I think about 900 pills within 6 months. I mean, it was pretty irresponsibly prescribed to me. And looking back on that, I wish I would have given some direction, some perspective on it then, because that sent me on a decade-long pursuit of trying to find a balance in my life between this chronic pain I was going through with my neck from the car accident and actually trying to find balance in my life with everything else. I mean, once you get used to having a medicine like that in your life, trying to take it out of it was a whole undertaking I was not prepared for. It was not educated on or anything. It was like the Wild West, it seemed like, in the late 2000s still when I was going through my recovery period. So, I mean, it was kind of a scary, lonely place at times because on one side of it, it seemed like everyone's kitchen table still had a bottle of pain medicine late in the 2000s. I mean, everyone had such a laissez-faire attitude towards it. There wasn't the stigma there is now, and I just went through this second car accident now at 31 years old, where I was now paralyzed from the waist down from being thrown clear from a car accident, and that was a whole undertaking on itself also. But yeah, I've been through quite a roller coaster ride so far.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for sharing that experience. It's really important for us to get that context, because in one instance, when you had acute trauma, your experience was very different than the second instance in which you had acute trauma. Can you talk a little bit about the first experience and when you were given pain medications and when you were then coming to the realization that, hey, perhaps this medication is not as I need it, but almost as I'm being dependent on it? Can you talk about that experience where you realize, hey, this is going from pain relief to something else?
Actually, I my mindset on that didn't really. The pharmacist actually was the first one to start raising red flags for me. I had a hometown pharmacist who was a chain pharmacy, not like a CVS or Walgreens, but like a local mom and pop pharmacy. And the pharmacist started telling me, "Hey, man, you gotta be careful." 'Cause at 19, I mean, I was getting, you know, the doctor prescribed me 6 to 8 pills a day. You know, when you weren't used to that at all, your body builds up a tolerance pretty fast. And but the doctor's perspective on it was that, you know, you're wearing a halo right now, you need this medicine. And I was, you know, just kind of not really, I was just taking his word for it, really, you know what I mean? And kind of just going along with the flow of things. And it went on like that, went for about 6 months, and it was just kind of falling off the cliff effect almost, because I got better. I took the halo off. I wore a hard neck brace for a couple more months while I was taking the medication still. And all of a sudden, the doctor basically said, the insurance company is basically indicated to us that, you know, you're good to go, you're going to be discharged. Basically, I was cut off that medication without any prior warning or anything like that. So here I was set up with an addiction without even knowing what it was yet.
So that's
I knew I was in trouble when I started getting sick, and I was starting asking questions about it. People were like, yeah, that's withdrawal.
So that's really interesting, because it's almost as though the care you were receiving from your physician was very different than the care you're experiencing. I want to talk a little bit about those initial moments of the dependency, but before I get to that, I want to get your perspective on your communication with your physician, because it seems as though your physician was more reliant upon the guidelines and the insurance coverage than any direct communication with you. Can you talk about some of the frustrations and kind of lack of respect you experienced during that communication period?
I feel like the insurance companies and what they were willing to pay for dictated my whole treatment plan. I mean, the only reason that was extended, I mean, there was the timetables put in place, and when those timetables were actually met faster than expected, I mean, that was the insurance companies were actually, you know, surprised that they were happy to, you know, to direct my treatment, tell the doctor, hey, you know, maybe you should cut him off or cut him down. I mean, almost without warning. They let him know, hey, your coverage is going to end, as if the insurance company was the patient, and I was like, you know, some third party. I felt like the insurance company, the doctors were more in communication than I was with my doctor, what the treatment plan was or anything like that. I mean, it was all very new to me, because, like I said, I'd never broken a bone, really. I had some experience with health problems when I was really young. I had an infection, so I'd been in the hospital before when I was really young, but, I mean, never with a broken bone or an experience with, like, long-term medication usage or anything like that, or what it was like to come off medication like that, because little did I know, the hardest part of the next decade of my life would be trying to find a balance in life and trying to find when was the right time to use medications like that and when it wasn't. So
let's talk about how you got to that balance. But obviously getting to that balance is a process. So you must have first experienced the state of addiction, and then you must have lived through it and go through the ups and downs that state entails. Can you talk a little bit about that first, hey, I think I have a dependency moment, and how you coped with it?
Yeah, I think it was family members that discovered a bunch of discarded bottles of empty prescription bottles when you put them all together, and they kind of were able to set them in front of me and show me, hey, put this in perspective now, how many bottles and how many pills you've actually taken. It didn't hit me until actually I kind of saw that perspective, like a couple years worth of prescriptions put in front of me, and that's a few dozen bottles. And I mean, the size of the bottles, it kind of hits you. Yeah, I processed all that through my system, and like it was no big deal, and it became, you know, such a common part of my nature of you know, of work. I mean, it became ingrained with my work. I mean, it's ingrained with everything, even your sex life as an adult. I mean, your libido is almost controlled by how much you're using the medication, how much you're dependent on it, you know, to get through your day, to get through, you know, sometimes for some people they can't eat, you know, without it, they can't do much of anything without it. I mean, as a chronic pain patient today, I know that I have to strike a balance. Like, I still take pain medications today, but I strike a very clean balance between, like, how much I need and how much I can get away with not using, because sometimes it's good to feel pain and know it's still going right with your body and what's going wrong, and you can't discern that if you're constantly on a thick amount of pain medication. So I've helped, you know, kind of learn that balance.
Tell me a little bit about what chronic pain feels like and what unresolved addiction feels like. Are they similar or are they different?
I'd say they're not mutually exclusive. I'd say they belong in the same conversation, because I know I have this conversation with my, you know, people I'm close to, you know, where I feel like I'm able to be open and be honest about the topic. I talk a lot about, am I dependent? Am I addicted? I ask myself that question a lot, because I feel like the line is very, very blurred and very hard to define in today's society too. And if I call myself an addict, it's so much more stigmatized than if I call myself just dependent on medicine. If I just say I'm just a patient who's using pain medication as the consequence of my chronic pain, it's, you know, it's constant. I mean, talking about chronic pain, it's a constant battle in my life where I'm kind of trying to strike a balance if it's tolerable enough, because it never goes away fully.
So that's really interesting. You mentioned that, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I think this is a really important point you mentioned. Clearly, these symptoms, these signs, these mental states you're going through are very personal. And I know you've gone a long way in your own development and strength to be able to articulate these feelings and expressions you have. But then there's this additional kind of societal layer, this stigma that clearly has impacted the way you think about yourself, the way you self-identify. Can you tell me a little bit about how the broader perceptions and the stigmas have kind of affected your own experience with these conditions?
I mean, just being a patient on these medications, Bill, I mean, do you see it in common, like on the John Oliver show or like Bill Maher's show, which are, you know, supposed to be the liberal expressions of, you know, today's topics and culture, and they have a bottle of prescription pills on both of their intros. And not in the sense of, like, you know, oh, it's okay to take these medications, in the sense of, like, this is symbolic of a epidemic of this is symbolic of something that's very evil in our society. And I, you know, there's a whole group of us out there that are still taking these medications that actually need to depend on these medications to get through a functional day. I mean, my quality of life is severely affected when I don't have these medications. You can ask those that my loved ones around me, and I, there's checks and balances I use in my life now where I leave my medications with loved ones, my family members that can, you know, keep them safe, keep them behind a safe place, so, you know, I can access them safely, you know what I mean? I have another pair of eyes on them for me, just in case. And I use checks and balances like that in my life now, because part of that is because we live in a society now where if I can't let that information get out, I mean, it's hard for me to even talk about that publicly about, you know, me being on that medication, because sometimes I'm just worried about, like, my own safety, about having medications like that in my house.
Yeah, no, first off, thank you for telling us this. I personally, I know that how hard it is for you to share these things. So I want to be very mindful that you are doing a great job expressing your honesty and your truth as you live it. And you should always want to feel that sense that you can express yourself. But it seems as though you have to put in these checks and balances, that part of your honesty is almost kind of dealing with the stigma, the unknown stigma that others may perceive you with. Is it fair to say that you almost have to balance your own perspectives relative to how others will look at you and kind of live your life that way?
Yeah, I honestly do. And I feel like you have to kind of, to be a truly, you know, disciplined patient on this medicine, you have to kind of discipline yourself. I mean, I feel like when they drug test us and treat us like we're probation patients half the time just to be on these medications, I feel like it's counterproductive, because, I mean, it's very intrusive and very, I mean, you know, having to, you know, be subject to pill counts and things like that of that nature, it's just very, it's a whole different, you know, approach to anything we've ever been through when it comes to medications, to have to do things like that. We're having to sign agreements now to get these medications that are tantamount to being on a probation, you know, being on probation for, like, with an officer and stuff like that. We're subject to drug tests and pill counts at any time, you know what I mean? If we don't comply for these, we're subject to lose our medications cold turkey without any consequence to the doctor or anything like that. So, and, you know, a lot of the times it's not the doctor's fault, it's the rules that have been put in place, you know, that are putting, you know, the fear in between the patient-doctor relationship that's just terrifying right now.
See, that's really interesting you mentioned that, because right now, your experience, your relationship with your physician is predicated on the fear of the legal ramifications. Whereas previously, you felt your relationship with your physician was beholden to the insurance policies and the coverage. Do you see any similarities in the quality of care or direct patient engagement you received? Or do you see this as drastically different types of experiences?
I think they're both problematic. I mean, and with the insurance companies dominating things, a lot of times they found that, you know, by being cheap and trying to save money early, they end up spending money a lot more later, because people have to go to the hospital or fix problems when they're acute, not when they're, you know, fixable, you know, preventable. You know, I mean, I've had experiences where the insurance companies just battled me, and then they end up having to pay more because I had to go to a hospital visit. You know, I ended up spending a week in the hospital, and that's a very, very expensive visit, whereas if it could have been resolved within a couple of office visits, I mean, the difference in price there is astronomical. And I just feel like, you know, whereas we're talking about, you know, focusing on, instead of insurance, focusing more on, you know, fear-based with doctors now being, you know, I've never heard so many physicians. It's just something. It's a new concept, actually. You know, having doctors and having physicians actually say to me, "Yeah, I'm actually worried about the legal ramifications of prescribing you a medicine or prescribing you, you know, this medicine or that medicine or a certain amount or this or that." I mean, actually having legal ramifications come into the office is a new thing for me, and that's just something that's been happening over the last 5 years or so.
Do you feel that this is an added stress that's compounding your already complex array of symptoms, or do you feel like you're able to separate kind of some of the more bureaucratic legal parts from how you are experiencing your own medical conditions?
I feel like it's compromising things, because I feel like I have to act and behave a certain way and kind of comply a certain way and make sure I don't know. It's a very strange time right now, because I feel like it's almost like we're all being watched during my visit. It almost feels like there's like a big brother, like someone's almost like watching, like supervising the visit. That's almost how the like doctors are behaving sometimes in some of the office visits. Like they're being watched too. And we can't be completely honest, like, you know, kind of, I don't know, just, it's just kind of a, I don't mean to be conspiratorial or anything like that. It just kind of feels like we're in a strange time right now where it's just like a pervading fear, and just trying and being honest and being open about like what things are honestly going on in my life and my honest reactions to certain medications and, papering things down, and you know what I mean? I'm being asked to taper things down, not because my treatments changed, my chronic pain's changed, but because it's a stigma for the doctor to have so many patients still on that medication. It's just a weird time right now.
No, certainly. And I think that's something a lot of people can relate to. Would you be able to share an experience without naming any names or institutions where you encountered a healthcare professional, be it a physician, a nurse, an administrator, where you can tell they were not being honest with you, that they were simply telling you things knowing that they were just doing what was in their best interest legally?
Absolutely. I had an instance one time, without naming any names, where I rolled into a facility and someone had recognized me. We had meant to call you back. They canceled my visit because of reading over my profile and just because of the medications I've been taking. Like, I felt like I don't know. And I was just given the runaround on that and wasn't given any honest answers on as to why they wouldn't take me on as a patient. Because sometimes when you're on state insurance on Medicaid and stuff like that, you don't have the option to go to whatever doctor you want to. Sometimes you're very limited in which doctors, especially specialists, that will take you. And when you're talking about pain medicine, which is a specialty now, sometimes, I mean, it can be very difficult for a Medicaid patient to find a reliable doctor. And sometimes they're clustered together in these pain clinics, you know, where there's five doctors together. And if you're out with one of those doctors, you're out with all five.
Yeah.
And they their tentacles kind of run through the whole region, you know, where they have an office in Portage, an office in Lowell, you know, and all over the place or whatever. You're not speaking specifically about anybody, but just saying, like, that can be problematic, because if you're on Medicare or Medicaid and you're only, you know, your insurance is only covered by one of those places, and you have some kind of falling out where, you know, like I said, you actually, God forbid, you breach your pain contract or something like that, because something happens in your life where, you know, things happen, you know, accidents happen, problems happen, you know, humans make mistakes, and for you to lose your medication cold turkey, that's a big fear for a lot of us that are chronic pain patients. Like, when are they going to cut me off cold turkey for the medication that helps my quality of life and helps me kind of to function, because it's been attacked consistently now for the past half decade. And it's just like ever since those CDC guidelines came out, where doctors were kind of given some direction without, you know, thinking about what the consequences would be of cutting so many patients down and off medications they've been accustomed to without any. The problem is there's been no great solution put in place to replace that. Like, if you're going to take away an option like that, you got to put something in place that's going to be a viable solution for people to turn to. There's no viable solution. That's why people have been turning to the streets and illicit deaths have been up, and it's a scary time.
So I think the problem you're alluding to, which clearly, being intelligent and articulate as you are, you're able to explain well. I want to talk a little bit about your experiences and the philosophies that you've developed experientially as a patient. But really, before I kind of jump into that, I want to maybe tease out another experience where, without naming names or institutions, where you try to explain your medical conditions to a physician, a nurse, and they just either were not getting it or they chose not to understand your plight. That must have been an extremely frustrating experience for you. Can you talk about those interactions that take place on a one-on-one level?
I think the most problematic experiences with that have been in the hospital ranks. I feel like hospitals now, there is a certain level of jaded, like there's a philosophy that a lot of the patients are coming in, if they're experiencing or complaining about pain, that it's made up, that it's in an effort to acquire pills or that we're drug seeking and stuff like that. And I think there's just been several experiences for me where a doctor has explicitly said to me, just by looking at your drug history, I can tell that you're here for one reason, and without even hearing me out or hearing what I had to say, and just being completely blackballed and basically pushed out of the hospital without any treatment or anything.
Wow.
Like that, because I've been, you know, identified as this type of patient, you know what I mean? Once you get stereotyped like that, it could be a very dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to get, like, my accident had been severe enough to where I had not been victimized by that, but I've heard several horror stories of people, you know, anecdotally, where they've gone through experiences where they've been turned away because, you know, they've been a bad mark on their record, their permanent record.
And then you essentially become stigmatized in that regard. One of the key things that I think is very important for people to realize is that as a patient with chronic pain who has experienced substance use dependency, you have a particular lived experience. That experience brings a certain understanding. Two questions, and they're not mutually exclusive, which is why I'm going to ask them at the same time. Why do you feel that hospitals, physicians, healthcare providers in general don't get your experience, even though there's so much out there in terms of the literature and white papers that these policies enacted by the DEA and CDC are harming patients? And two, if you are able to speak to, let's say, Congress, the president, or any sort of federal administrator, what sort of advice or insight would you want to share based on your experiences?
I would just caution people against using anecdotal evidence as, you know, as gospel for, in terms of, like, I know a lot of people in the healthcare field that have had a bad experience with a family member where they've had a family member die or have an overdose or a bad experience, which has turned them into kind of like a crusader against the medicine, where it's not so much the medicines that need to be attacked, or it's just the mindset towards it and how we use those medicines. I mean, I feel like there's a time and there's a place for these pain medicines in our society, and they've been using opiates for thousands of years in society for medicines of different kinds, and all of a sudden now we're, you know, back in this situation where they're so stigmatized and so troublesome for people. I would caution against politicians and people that are in charge of making decisions to look at both sides and hear more than just a story or two, you know, before you make a decision. Yes, there's going to be the horror stories where there's going to be the mother that lost a child due to an overdose because the doctor was irresponsible, but there's also so many other stories where patients have been saved and spared and given some measure of a quality of life because they're on a medication that allows them to get up and clean themselves and, you know, feel like a normal member of society, whereas if they're stuck in bed all day and they literally are mindful of their pain all day and they can't shake that awful chronic pain all day because they can't get medicated properly because there's people who are making decisions above them who feel like there's just no one deserves to be on this medication because they're just too dangerous for anyone to be in. And that decision needs to be made by each individual with each individual physician because it's a case-by-case basis. Making broad decisions on these things, like the CDC did with their decision, making broad decisions on these things is always harmful because it's such a case-by-case basis.
And you,
it's a year-by-year basis. I mean, my philosophy's changed as years go by.
Yeah, no, clearly this is something you've grappled with for quite some time, and you developed a clear understanding because of it. You allude to this kind of balance where the policies affect the individual experience, the regulatory policies, the laws affect the individual clinical experience. Let's tease that out a little bit more. You've mentioned bad experiences with physicians before the policies, essentially the CDC guidelines and other pain policies became gospel, and you mentioned bad experiences after they became gospel. Can you tell a little bit on how you feel the individual experience should be improved with or without the guidelines? Because it seems like there's a more fundamental problem with the patient-physician experience that you're alluding to. And I'm kind of trying to figure out, how would the adjustment of the guidelines help address that more fundamental issue?
I just don't understand why common sense never came into it. Like, at first we were over-prescribing and being so loose and fast and loose with the rules, and now we're being so tight and so restrictive that it's harming people. I mean, can't we just have a common sense perspective? Like, yes, we should keep these drugs out of the hands of people that are, you know, pain clinics are a bad thing. Pill mills are a bad thing. Obviously, we know that now. We don't need physicians, you know, having people, you know, on the fringes of the doctor world, you know, handing out these prescriptions willy-nilly so people can go on the street and sell them. Obviously, that's a dangerous thing. But we also need a safe and, you know, honest and open discussion, you know, to be able to be had with our doctors, you know, about these medications if we do need them to be a part of our lives. And those discussions need to be held on a one-on-one basis and not, you know, broadly restricted because of the pendulum swing one way or the other. Like I said, the last 5 years have been held the other way because the rules have been so restrictive. I mean, they keep cutting down the actual number of medicine manufactured. So at the end of the year, a lot of these pharmacies are scrambling just to cover the prescriptions because there's not enough medication that was made for the year.
Yeah, you know,
their way of solving it, just not making enough medication. You know, there's no accountability there. Keep filling prescriptions and just run out of medication. That's what happened last year.
That's a big issue, and the DEA sets the annual quota for the medications. As a patient who's taking certain opioids, you're clearly on the lookout for the quantity limitations. Do you guys ever kind of talk to the pharmacist or get some insight? Hey, we may be running low here. You may want to go to the other pharmacy. Is there ever kind of some underground channels where you guys communicate where supply is limited?
None. That's the problem. I think the biggest problem with the pharmacies going more out of the mom-pop realm and into this chain pharmacy world we live in now is that the pharmacists and the pharmacy techs are almost much farther removed. When I used to have, there was a chain of pharmacies around here called Fagan's Pharmacy.
Yes.
And I used to love Fagan's Pharmacy. My pharmacist was supposed to be, he was one of the first 30 to my withdrawal problem. I was very close to the pharmacist. He was a very good man, and he was very helpful and helped direct me to this very, you know, he helped me get through some experiences that, you know, I was not being steered to, you know, early on in life. I was very grateful for his help, and, you know, they were always just very helpful and very insightful about things, and our relationship was good. It seems like now my relationship with them is not good at all. They don't ever let me know if, like, they're running low, or, like, I you would think there would be some kind of accountability with that kind of medication because it's so restrictive that they would have, okay, if we don't have this amount in our system, when this prescription is going to be due up, because now what the doctors do is they send in the electronic, the e-scripts, and they send it. My doctor sends them for 3 months at a time, so I have three one-month scripts sitting there. So every 30 days, I can refill the prescription. I have to call the pharmacy, but they act like every time I call them, that it's like the first time I've ever called them. There's no preparation, so there's been many times where they haven't had enough of that medication stock. You have to take a partial prescription, and they have to scuttle the rest of your prescription, which is a whole process because then you have to call the doctor and get a whole new prescription for the amount of medication that you missed out on, and that's a whole can of worms, and it's a lot of extra phone calls, and it's just difficult in this day and age, and these extra obstacles and barriers are put in front of people. It's difficult to be a chronic pain patient these days, that's for sure, and even more difficult to be a physician prescribing these medications. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. For these types of situations, does the responsibility lie on you to coordinate the calls between the physician and the pharmacist, or are there administrators or social workers would help you with that?
I feel like there should be some having the option to have some social workers to help, because I feel like I can be in charge of that, but I don't feel like everyone can.
Right.
I mean, I feel like I'm in a situation where I'm lucky to have my faculties about me. My accident was such that my brain was spared from any serious harm. And I'm very blessed for that, and I'm able to control a lot of my, you know, being disabled. I mean, there's a lot of paperwork and there's a lot of stuff you got to keep filled out, and you got to keep yourself apprised of. But they just don't. There's not like someone that they just assigned you automatically. You know, just tells you what to do and how to approach things, and you're gonna have to figure it out on your own. It's crazy.
If there's one thing, and kind of let's leave it at that. If there's one thing you could tell the head of the CDC, the head of the DEA, to help them to better understand you and improve your own quality of life, what would you like to tell them?
That patients are more than just a policy number, or just, you know, we're all individuals. We have to be taken seriously on a case by case basis. I know that's hard to do sometimes from their perspective as an agency, but just give people get some more power and some more incentive back to the doctors to handle things, you know, within their office. Not have to get direct oversight from agencies and different things. I just feel like there's so much oversight right now. There's so many hands in the cookie jar right now that it's causing, like we talked about with the insurance companies and everything else. I just feel like there's too many people involved, too many people in the office right now. Like, I just want it to be my doctor and myself. Like, I wish they could get back to that. I feel like there's so many other representatives in the office right now. I feel like there's a CDC representative. I feel like there's a DEA representative. I feel like there's a representative for the insurance company, for the pharmacy. I feel like, you know, there's so many people that need that are involved, and it's like it's clouded what's become just an honest conversation between my doctor about, like, what's wrong right now? What are you experiencing? What are your symptoms? And how can we treat that? It's like a very basic and fundamental couple of questions I have to ask sometimes, but, like, they can't be answered because there's so many obstacles, so much in the way, so...
Well, awesome. That was an incredible podcast. Matt, I could clearly see the passion in your voice. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. People can really benefit and learn from your experiences. I know it wasn't easy for you to come on and do this, but you did it, and I'm really proud of you for doing that. And I hope that we can continue to talk in the future, because honestly, it's just really good to hear your voice.
Yes, I'd love to do it again soon. Actually, therapeutic and beneficial for me too, and you know I had some nerves doing this at first, but I feel like it's important for me to, you know, assist in getting my voice out there and helping people that are going through the same issue as me that maybe can't speak for themselves. That, you know, that I think that's part of my destiny now, is to actually, you know, help those that are kind of in a similar situation speak for those who can't speak for themselves.
Awesome, Matt, and if there's anything I can do to help you live that out, you know that I'm always there for you. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time, and let's go ahead and conclude the podcast. Thank you.